VOA News.
Today is Tuesday, February 22nd. U.S. President Joe Biden briefed reporters on Russia's decision to recognize areas of Ukraine as independent states.
This is a flagrant violation of international law and demands a firm response from the international community.
Plus, the latest from the United Nations after the Security Council met late last night.
We must make it clear that an attack on Ukraine is an attack on the sovereignty of every UN member state and the UN Charter.
And later in the program, what's life like today on both sides of the Ukraine-Russia border? From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller in Alexandria, Virginia. Speaking to reporters at the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden again condemned Russian President Vladimir Putin's announcement on Monday evening in which he formally recognized two areas within Ukraine as independent nations.
He's setting up a rationale to take more territory by force, in my view. And if we listened to his speech last night, and many of you did, I know, he's setting up a rationale to go much further. This is the beginning of a Russian invasion of Ukraine, as he indicated and asked permission to be able to do from his Duma.
The president then went on into detail as to his administration's response.
This is a flagrant violation of international law and demands a firm response from the international community. So today, I'm announcing the first tranche of sanctions to impose costs on Russia in response to their actions yesterday. These have been closely coordinated with our allies and partners, and we'll continue to escalate sanctions if Russia escalates. We're implementing full blocking sanctions on two large Russian financial institutions, VEB and their military bank. We're implementing comprehensive sanctions on Russian sovereign debt. That means we've cut off Russia's government from Western financing. It can no longer raise money from the West and cannot trade in its new debt on our markets or European markets either. Starting tomorrow and continuing in the days ahead, we'll also impose sanctions on Russia's elites and their family members. They share in the corrupt gains of the Kremlin policies and should share in the pain as well. And because of Russia's actions, we've worked with Germany to ensure Nord Stream 2 will not, as I promised, will not move forward. As Russia contemplates its next move, we have our next move prepared as well. Russia will pay an even steeper price if it continues its aggression, including additional sanctions.
Biden also shared some of the latest Russian troop assessments.
There are still well over 150,000 Russian troops surrounding Ukraine. And as I said, Russian forces remain positioned in Belarus to attack Ukraine from the north, including warplanes and offensive missile systems. Russia's moved troops closer to Ukraine's border with Russia. Russia's naval vessels are maneuvering in the Black Sea to Ukraine's south, including amphibious assault ships, missile cruisers, and submarines. Russia's moved supplies of blood and medical equipment into position on their border. You don't need blood unless you plan on starting a war.
The president concluded his remarks by noting that there was still an opportunity to de-escalate.
The United States and our allies and partners remain open to diplomacy if it is serious. When all is said and done, we're going to judge Russia by its actions, not its words. And whatever Russia does next, we're ready to respond with unity, clarity, and conviction.
The story is still fluid, so for the latest updates, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. Now, earlier on Monday, Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba met with officials in Washington. And joining us live from the Pentagon is VOA's Pentagon correspondent, Carla Babb. Carla, I want to begin our conversation here with Minister Kuleba there at the Pentagon. You know, his schedule was kind of altered a little bit from what was originally posted, but what can you tell us about his meeting there?
So his meeting was very important because while we've been hearing from NATO and the United States about how the NATO alliance is unified, Ukraine has a much different perspective in all of this. You know, he came here to Washington and he told Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, I'm here on a diplomatic mission, but these days diplomacy also means defense. And he was very clear that President Vladimir Putin's speech, Russian President Vladimir Putin's speech yesterday, was not about the recognition of Donbass and Luhansk. It was about the destruction of the Ukrainian state. That's what he said, the destruction of the Ukrainian state. So very, very somber mood, very serious mood at the Pentagon today. And as you heard later, the president making those additional announcements of troop deployments to the eastern flank to further support NATO as everything continues to escalate in Ukraine.
Carla, we have about a minute left. And one of the things that President Biden spoke about at the White House was some shifting of U.S. troops in Europe. Can you explain what we know about that development?
That's right. VOA was actually the first to report specifically that these troop deployments would include a battalion from Italy. That's about 800 to 1,000 U.S. troops going to the Baltic region from Italy. Also, 8 F-35 strike fighters are going to be moving from Germany to the Baltics. We've got about 20 Apache helicopters. Those are attack helicopters going from Germany to the Baltics. And even 12 Apache helicopters are going to be moving from Greece to Poland. And these moves are being done, the White House and the Pentagon say, to deter further aggression into NATO, to reassure NATO allies. And they are, you know, we've been hearing these announcements more and more. So I imagine that if things get worse in Ukraine, we may see even more announcements in the coming day.
Carla Babb reports from the Pentagon for Voice of America. Carla, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
No problem, Steve.
The United Nations Security Council also met in an emergency session late night on Monday after Russia's president signed a declaration recognizing the two breakaway regions of Ukraine as independent states. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir provided the latest updates from that international body.
So it was the UN Security Council, so it's the 15 council members. Ukraine participated and Germany participated because they've been very active in the negotiations trying to avoid a conflict. So basically, we heard the overwhelming majority of the 15 council members express their support for Ukraine's sovereignty, its territorial integrity, and its political independence, and its internationally recognized borders, which is important. And they condemned Russia's move to recognize Donetsk and Luhansk as a breach of international law and of international norms and a breach of the UN charter and of the Minsk agreements, which are basically the framework agreement for ceasefire in Ukraine. And the UN's political chief was very clear in saying that we are at a dangerous crossroads and the risk of a major conflict is real and it needs to be prevented at all costs. So the Ukrainian convoy, Sergei Kislytsa, was very clear in his message to the council. He said, Russia can say what it likes, but there's no change to Ukrainian territory. And he spoke to the council. Let's take a listen.
The internationally recognized borders of Ukraine have been and will remain unchangeable, regardless of any statements and actions by the Russian Federation.
Margaret, I want to ask you about the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. On the Security Council, the U.S. is one of several permanent members. What did the U.S. ambassador have to say following Monday's announcement by Russian President Vladimir Putin that Russia would formally recognize two regions inside Ukraine as independent states?
So, you know, on Monday, Putin, as you mentioned, he not only recognized these two Russian-occupied regions, Donetsk and Luhansk, as independent states, but he also announced he was sending what he called peacekeepers into the region, which, as you can imagine, Western countries are not buying that description, especially when there are 150,000 or more Russian troops and naval forces surrounding Ukraine at the moment. So U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield expressed the importance of international support for Ukraine at this moment when its very existence as a sovereign state is being challenged. Let's listen.
In this moment, no one can stand on the sidelines. We must make it clear that an attack on Ukraine is an attack on the sovereignty of every UN member state and the UN Charter, and that it will be met with swift and severe consequences.
Margaret, with leaders from the United States and Europe and elsewhere condemning Russia's actions, how did Russia's representative to the UN Security Council and the United Nations respond?
So that's Lena Benzia, who actually we haven't seen all month because he had COVID, appeared last night for the first time. And he said that from listening to other council members, one might get the impression that Moscow's decision to recognize Donetsk and Luhansk as republics was impulsive. And he said it wasn't. So let's take a listen to what he said, and you will hear here the voice of the Russian interpreter.
Of course, that's not the case. It should be remembered that the DPR and the LPR declared their independence from Ukraine back in 2014. But we only recognize them now, despite the high level of support for doing so, both in the republics themselves and in Russian society from the very beginning.
So Margaret, you know, what's on docket for the United Nations today, and specifically UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres?
So the Secretary General is on a plane back to New York from the Democratic Republic of Congo at the moment. We're expecting to possibly hear from him at the end of the day in New York. And he's offered his good offices. Till now, he's mostly stayed in the background, letting the principals do their own mediation. We've seen, for instance, the French president and the new German chancellor at the forefront of European efforts. Also, the Americans have been very active at every level, conducting more than 100 meetings with their counterparts, including the summit that was in Geneva several weeks ago between Presidents Biden and Putin. And on Wednesday, the UN General Assembly is going to hold what's become really an annual session since 2014 on the annexation of Crimea. And, you know, the General Assembly doesn't have the same sort of power that the Security Council does, but it has a moral authority. And it'll be very important to hear from many of the 193 member states what they think of Russia's action. It's important sort of to isolate Russia in global public opinion for this illegal action. And I imagine we'll hear strong statements Wednesday, including from the Ukrainian foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, who will be in New York to participate in the session.
Margaret Brashear is VOA's UN correspondent. Thank you. Now, on the border of Ukraine and Russia is reporter Ricardo Marquina. Now, I spoke with him earlier today about what he's seeing on the ground in Rostov-on-Don.
Well, yesterday when we tried to talk with the people that are coming from Donetsk and Lugansk, so we moved exactly to the border, to the checkpoint. In the road, is something like 1 hour and a half by car. We saw perhaps hundreds of different tanks and military equipment and soldiers waiting in the road in direction to Ukraine. So direction to Ukraine, in direction to Donetsk. So, and all these tanks and soldiers that yesterday was just waiting, today are not. So all they leave, and we think they leave in direction to Donetsk, because we have information that already they arrived in the morning to Donetsk, and they are moving all around this territory, the so-called Republic of Donetsk. So today we try again to be near the border, and we didn't saw nothing. So all these tanks there are not. We saw some military transport, soldiers, also in direction Donetsk. But all these tanks that they've been waiting yesterday, all they are not right now.
What have you witnessed in terms of there have been previous reports of people leaving Donetsk and other areas in the Donbass going into Russia? Have you seen civilians crossing into Russia?
Yes, yes. I come here to Rostov with the idea to have interviews with these people. Was very difficult to manage because for some reason that I really can understand, the Russian authorities are making very difficult to talk with them. Finally, I managed to be today in one hotel that is now a place to get these people. So there are people, almost all of them, there are women, children from babies to 7-8 years. I saw a lot of them, all ladies. Some old men, but women, mothers and sons, mother and children. I talk with them, and of course there are they move to Russia because they are afraid about, you know, be again in the middle of war. Most of them, they already been in this situation, so they know what is you know, what the sound of the bomb is, so they don't want this back. So when you ask them if there are here because they want or because they tell them to go to Russia, they have a very mixed emotion. For it's true that in one hand, they don't want to be in a war area. And I think everyone understands now that Donetsk and Lugansk can become very quickly a war zone. But in the other hand, they tell them to go. You know, they didn't give it the option to choose. So it's quite a mixed feelings about that. But all of them, they of course, there are civilians. There are not military personnel, so they only want to be, you know, be back home as soon as possible. They feel themselves like the victims that they are. They really are. They are in the middle of all this. So they all hope to be home as soon as possible.
In Rostov on Don, near Russia's border with Ukraine, Ricardo Makina, thank you very much for your time, and please stay safe.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Jamie Detmer is in the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv, and earlier today, I asked him how people were reacting to the events during the last 24 hours.
Pretty stunned, Steve. Last night was interesting. You know, a Monday night in any city is never the liveliest night. But last night, it was definitely subdued. There was the roads were pretty empty. The restaurants were being neglected. There weren't many pedestrians around because people had heard the rumor later in the afternoon that President Putin was going to make a major announcement. And the rumor was he would recognize these two breakaway republics, which were very much fashioned by Moscow 8 years ago. And the reaction was one of being stunned. The 56-minute speech, I think, took most people's breath away. I mean, people I've talked to, from ordinary folks on the streets to senior politicians. It wasn't just the recognition of these two breakaway republics. It was the sheer bellicosity of Putin's speech that surprised them. The very fanciful historical narrative about Ukraine and it not really being a country. And the very audacious hostility towards the West. And most people came away from it feeling that war, a larger war, a reinvasion, is increasingly likely. And I talked to some senior politicians this evening who are very alarmed about this, you know, particularly the removal of embassy staff. And another point, Dmitry Peskov, the Kremlin spokesman, was today questioned in Moscow about exactly where the borders of these new republics begin and end, because the area that's occupied by the proxies or separatists, however you want to describe them, in these republics is 40% of the Donbass region. So that means another 60% that they could be laying claim to. So that's unnerving people as well.
Jamie, Putin's remarks were earlier on Monday evening, but later that night, Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian president, did address the nation. What have you heard about how people are responding to his remarks?
There's some disappointment with Zelensky. Look, the international media doesn't really ask enough awful questions of the Ukrainian president. And you can talk to very centrist politicians here who are very pro-EU, who are not on the fringes or the extremes, who are uncomfortable for a number of reasons. One, they don't actually think he has a strategy, an overall strategy, and he hasn't had for some time, is their criticism. Secondly, they feel that he should have made a speech at the podium of the parliament rather than at 2 a.m. in the morning, a pretty short speech at 2 a.m. in the morning on television. The other thing that I think we're going to have to follow a bit is if this does widen out into a bigger war, if there is a reinvasion by Russia and we see refugees, you know, leaving Ukraine to Poland, from my understanding, there haven't really been really any serious negotiations about the logistics of this between the Poles, the most likely country that will receive refugees, and the Ukrainians. The other concern that's been raised to me by senior politicians, opposition politicians, against centrists, who say they've been asking questions about what strategic reserves does the government have in terms of energy supplies or in terms of food supplies? And they can't get an answer to this. Now, on Friday, there is a parliamentary meeting of some of the committees with the cabinet of ministers who are going to press them on these very important practical logistical questions.
Jamie Detmer is reporting from the capital of Ukraine, Kyiv.
NATO and Europeans are continuing to respond to Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision to recognize those two areas within Ukraine as independent states. Henry Ridgewell is covering these stories and more currently in Berlin, Germany. And we began our chat earlier today by recapping the day's events.
The biggest response so far has come from the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, who has announced the freezing or the non-certification of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. This pipeline, of course, brings gas directly from Russia to the German coast. It had been on the table as a possible sanction against Russia, but it had seemed that the German government had been reluctant to explicitly talk about it as a leverage tool against Russia. But today, the German Chancellor came out and said that certification process is being ended. So there's no prospect of that gas pipeline being opened anytime soon. Britain also came strongly out of the blocks today, putting sanctions immediately on 5 Russian banks and 3 high net worth Russian individuals, as the British government put it, and said this was just the start of a package of measures that would be rolled out as the crisis develops or if it worsens over the coming weeks. European Union member states also said that sanctions are on the way, though they did not specify exactly who or what would be sanctioned within Russia. But I think the dilemma for Europe and NATO and the West at the moment is they don't know quite how hard to go. At the moment, Russia has recognized the breakaway republics of Donetsk and Luhansk, yet the Russian troops have not yet crossed the border, as we understand, although there are some unconfirmed reports of some Russian tanks in that region. Do they go hard now with the sanctions in order to try to deter any further action from Russia? Or do they hold something in reserve in case the situation escalates, in case Russia pushes the contact line deeper into Ukraine, or indeed puts on a full-scale invasion of the country, in which case they have to have something, you would have thought, in reserve in order to go harder against Moscow.
Henry, I wanted to ask you something else. Last with ministers meeting in Brussels, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg announced the formation of additional battle groups to bolster NATO's defenses. Can you kind of walk us through how that organization has been responding to the situation between Russia and Ukraine?
NATO's response has been several weeks and several months in the making. Forward operating bases that NATO set up in the wake of Russia's forceful annexation of Crimea in 2014 have been extended. They have been strengthened. So several NATO member states have sent additional troops, including the United States, for example, bolstering its presence in Poland, where it has now several thousand troops. For example, Britain has strengthened its number of troops in Estonia. France is sending more troops to Romania, and several states are also sending military hardware, jets, for example, to monitor the skies around the NATO borders. But we haven't seen a specific response yet militarily in terms of NATO sending troops to particular contact areas. Now, this may not mean that it won't happen. We may well see a strengthening of NATO's eastern borders, particularly one vulnerable point is seen along the Poland-Belarus border, for example. Russia still has several thousand troops in Belarus. They were there supposedly for military exercises. Moscow says it's now keeping those troops. So that Polish-Belarus border effectively becomes a border between NATO and Russia now. And the danger is that that could be seen as a vulnerability. That area could be strengthened.
Henry Ridgewell speaking to us from Berlin, Germany.
Thanks so much, Steve.
And that's going to do it for us today. You know, the news doesn't stop when this program ends, so be sure to stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine, as well as news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day. Just point your web browser, your on your phone, your desktop computer, or any other device to voanews.com. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. I'm Steve Miller in Alexandria, Virginia. Have a good night.